Today, can households balance their books? Insights into family finances. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well, that is Post, covering finance and property news. Well, of course, we continue to run our household surveys, and over the next few days, we're going to be sharing the latest from those results. And this is important because, as we're going to describe, there are some very significant and concerning trends running on below the surface. And in fact, on Tuesday, we're going to run the live stream specifically where you can drill down and get close to what's happening inside family finances across postcodes in Australia. But I want to start the conversation today with a bit of philosophy, because there is actually a fundamental disconnect between two different ways of thinking and using data. One is called inductive reasoning, and the other is deductive reasoning. Now, interestingly, most economists are using inductive reasoning, where they are drawing generalized conclusions based on specific information. And of course, the question then is, well, how much information is enough? And in fact, we are surrounded by acres and acres of data, and people use that to try and draw general conclusions into specific conclusions. Now, I have a problem with that insofar that you don't know whether you have enough data, you don't know whether the data you've got is correct. And a good example is the information from HILDA. That's one of the big surveys that's done in Australia. But of course, it's heavily lagged, 2 to 3 years generally. And it's interesting that people like the RBA and a number of other economists use the HILDA data to try and justify their positions. I have a feeling that sometimes it's convenient rather than actually being accurate. Now, I don't use inductive reasoning. I use deductive reasoning. I start from a hypothesis. And the hypothesis, of course, then leads me to do some testing. And that testing is done through my surveys. It's a scientific method, actually. And that means that we can actually put in our surveys questions to test what we would expect to see. And in a good scientific approach, if we start seeing data that aligns with what we expect to see, we know we're onto something. Whereas in fact, if the data signals something different, then we'd have to go back and start again. Now this approach, deductive reasoning, is very different. It's a logical process and involves drawing specific conclusions based on some general principles or a premise or a hypothesis. It's a top-down approach to logical thinking, and it follows a structured format. If the premise is true and the reasoning is valid, the conclusion must also be true. This type of reasoning is commonly used in mathematics, formal logic, and philosophical thinking. Yes, I'm a philosopher, so guess what? I use deductive reasoning. And here's an example. All mammals have lungs. Dolphins are mammals. Therefore, dolphins have lungs. The first premise establishes a general principle. The second identifies dolphins as a specific example of that. And using deductive reasoning, we can logically conclude the dolphin must also have lungs. And of course, if we test that along the way, we can be pretty sure we're right. So I have a hypothesis that underpins the research that I do. And it's this. My hypothesis is that in Australia, there is a rising proportion of households who are experiencing significant cash flow pressures because of rising housing costs, higher goods and services costs compared with income. As a result of that, more are having to make difficult trade-offs when spending. So we would expect to see higher mortgage and rental stress, a greater use of food banks, and more calls to debt helplines. Well, guess what? According to Food Bank Australia, in their Hunger Report 2024, there was an increased demand for food banks. 3.5 million households ran out of food in the last year alone. 26% of food insecure households accessed formal food relief in the last 12 months, an increase from 24% in 2023. And over half, 53% of food insecure households report receiving food relief more often than a year ago. And a number of households receiving help from family and friends has dropped, making food relief charities even more crucial. Another data point is those reaching out to the National Debt Helpline, the NDH. This data from Financial Counselling Australia says that there's been a significant increase in the number of people reaching out to the National Debt Helpline over the past year. During 2024, more than 169,000 people called in or used the chat online tool to get help from financial counsellors. That's a 12% increase from 2023. And total visits to the National Debt Helpline website also increased, with around 647,000 visits last calendar year, compared to 490,522 the year before. That's a 32% increase. And the cost of living pressures are mounting, they say, and having a significant impact on the financial well-being of many thousands of Australians. They go on to talk about things like housing stress, mortgage, rent, rates, and body corporate, utilities, credit card debt, personal loans, buy now, pay later, and ATO debt. And the latest data from their information portal shows a considerable rise of inquiries compared with 2016. And in fact, in 2016, for the full year, there was about 150,000. But up to today, 144,000 in 2025, with more months to run towards the end of the year. And they also provide some data on the state position, New South Wales and Victoria, of course, being the highest population, has the highest level. Queensland is there too. Remember, the 2025 data is year to date, so it's not complete yet for the full year. Now, another data point which is quite interesting is from the ATO. They released quarterly spending volume and price data recently, and the household spending indicator captures around 60% of total consumer expenditure in the national accounts, but it excludes major categories including rent and other dwelling services, electricity, gas and other fuels, communication services, education, insurance and related services. So it's partial. But nevertheless, the information did show that by broad category, there was a flip in the drivers of growth compared to the past 2 months. Goods spending rose at 0.4% in September, beating a flat result for services spending. Looking across the non-discretionary and discretionary split, the former posted a 0.6% monthly rise versus a flat result for discretionary spending on a three-month analysed basis. Non-discretionary spending accounted for about 8% of the growth, its largest share since April. Non-discretionary, the things you have to buy, you have to pay for, is driving household spending. And they go on to say that actually this is a softer quarter on total volume growth. And if you strip out things like cigarettes and tobacco spending, then the rest of the growth will be even more of a problem. This shows you that there is clear downside risk to the real consumer spending, which will come out in December. And this shows that households are under the gun, despite what others have been saying. And of course, the RBA recently in their statement of monetary policy talked about households paying down mortgages and experiencing significant wealth accumulation because property prices were rising, and claiming, well, that everything in the garden looks pretty good. No, I don't believe it. My hypothesis stands. I still think more households are under the gun. And in fact, there was a recent article published by Aidan Devine using my data that highlighted some of the hotspots that we've been talking about for quite some time. And if we look at the story here, they talk about the analysis, soaring bills, and that puts pressure on households. Mortgage broker and economist Joseph Dowd said that rapid rises in prices are pressurizing homeowners to take on much larger debt to compete for houses, but also he encouraged longer-term homeowners to draw out equity to buy an investment property or to upgrade their house. So you can see here the property machine is still running. Interestingly, the AFR reported that how the housing market was tipped to cool as rate cut hopes diminished. And this, of course, is because the RBA held the cash rate at 3.6% on Tuesday. And we could actually be at the end of the rate cutting cycle. Oh, and interestingly, did you know this? Housing Australia is now buying a third of homes off the shelf from developers. So the government plan, administering the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund, in tenant estimates, said that they were delivering homes, but they were using turnkey homes. In other words, they were competing with first-time buyers directly rather than investing in new properties. Well, that's not a good look, is it? And by the way, on Housing Australia, there was a very significant piece of data here also that suggested that Housing Australia was losing around 26% of staff. That was overall turnover in the 12 months to the end of August. This includes redundancies, terminations, and one employee who passed away, and 29 employees who left voluntarily. Now, of course, Housing Australia is rightly under significant scrutiny. But this article put it quite nicely together. Shane Wright has his finger on the pulse here. And he did actually highlight the fact that the question of future rate paths are now up in the air. Reporting Michelle Bullock's press conference on Tuesday and ABC reporter David Chow, who asked about the previous forecast, hopes appear to have been greatly diminished or even dashed, he said. Now, Bullock noted that she and the bank's Monetary Policy Committee had been fairly cautious in making monetary policy predictions before getting to a key point about interest rates in this country. We did not go up as high as other countries. We therefore possibly have less room to come down, she said. Of course, the critical issue here is that we may not see any further rate cuts. According to Commonwealth Bank's head of Australian economics, Belinda Allen, we may be at the end of the cutting cycle. And research released this week also suggests that Australians are using offset and redraw accounts, which could actually mean that the impact of rate cutting wouldn't be as expected. Now, interestingly, the RBA also showed that for every 10% lift in house prices, economic growth was 0.7% higher, which suggests that the RBA would like to see house prices going continued higher, despite the fact that, of course, more households are getting into some difficulty. Food Bank this week reported half of all renters are suffering from some form of food insecurity. What's been surprising, however, is the lack of widespread financial damage across the nation's army of borrowers who've borne the brunt of the RBA actions because, well, delinquencies are relatively low. But of course, the banks are extending and pretending. And the point I want to make is that the economic issues swirling around the RBA and around Australians generally are actually not being fully interpreted correctly, in my view, which is why my hypothesis is so critical. There are some that are doing well, but there are others whose incomes are being eroded relative to costs. And despite the fact that the average mortgage duration is now a lot longer, the amount of money required to get into that property is a lot bigger, two incomes rather than one, for example, and still quite often 40% of disposable income going on the mortgage, and of those in the rental sector, of course, absolutely under the gun. Well, that takes us then to our analysis. And to remind you, we do our core market model analysis every month by taking results from our surveys. We have 50,000 households in the survey sample at any one time. And we can slice and dice the data lots of different ways. Remember, I'm testing my hypothesis, as I showed earlier on. But we're also forming a view as to where prices may go ahead based on our scenarios too. And we can look at things like the mortgage stress trends, the price trajectory and history, the buying and selling intentions of households, the migration data, the economic data like CPI, wages and employment, into the core market model, into our scenarios. And then we can look at information at the postcode level, region, state and Australia level, and form a view as to where prices may go ahead. At this point, quick advert, we do provide a one-on-one service here. If you're interested in having a conversation with me about a particular suburb, we can do that. This isn't financial advice, of course. I can't provide financial advice, but I can provide information using my data, looking at specific information about the underlying trends. We can look at stress, home price trend data, and form a view as to where price trends might run based on my modeling. And I can look at this from an investment perspective as well, with investment returns too. This conversation normally takes about an hour via Zoom or phone, and we're quite busy. We do have to charge, unfortunately, for this particular service, but if you're interested, you can contact me by my blog. Links are below. Spaces are limited each week, and we're still booking 3 to 5 weeks out simply because of the demand. So now let's look at the data from the modeling. And on the way in, remind you that when we talk about stress, we're talking about cash flow terms here, money in, money out. We're not looking at a specific percentage like 30% of income or even taxable income, nor are we using specific underwriting metrics like some others do. We define stress in cash flow terms, money in, money out. If households have more outgoings, excluding one-off discretionary items than income, we define them as stressed. If they have a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, then they're in rental stress. And we can look at investors as well with cash flow pressures and identify stressed investors. And we can aggregate it to look at total financial stress down at a suburb or postcode level. And we can talk in percentage of households and counts. And you know that I quite often say the big number rule says that large counts are the critical indicator. The RBA helpfully some time ago defined the spectrum of household financial stress, which I use in my models, have been doing for 25 years or so. At the mild end, we have budget pressures, so people are balancing money in, money out, and prioritizing, hopefully effectively. But the risk is there's a drift into missing payments, and as intensity of financial stress gets worse, there is the risk of insolvency. But as I said earlier on, insolvency is still quite low at the moment, partly because banks are extending and pretending and helping people through longer mortgages in terms of years outstanding. They pay more interest, of course, and interest only mortgages, they pay more interest, which helps the banks, but not necessarily households. So let's now look at the stress data for October 2025. And the first trend we're going to look at is rental stress. So unfortunately, rental stress is still very high. 75% of those in the rental sector have cash flow pressures. And you can see that it's been building considerably since the 2020-2021 period through COVID and remains horribly high. Mortgage stress is just at 50%. And we're seeing roughly half of households with a mortgage with cash flow pressures, the other half doing fine and paying down mortgages, of course. There, others, though, are struggling to make ends meet, compared with 32.9% before COVID hit in February 2020. Oh, and by the way, the Reserve Bank reports the debt-to-income ratio is 181. You can see that that's higher than it was in the year 2000. But of course, that really doesn't tell you the full story because they use all households, whether they're borrowing or not, and actually include small businesses in the calculation. The truth is that many people are getting mortgages at the moment with incomes at 6 or 7 times. So let's look at the October 2025 results from our model. In yellow, we've highlighted where stress is higher than last month. In blue, where it's lower than last month. So you can see that in mortgage stress, there was a rise in mortgage stress in the Northern Territory, Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, Western Australia, totaling 50% overall. Rental stress rose in New South Wales, Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, and 75.1% in rental stress. Stressed investors were up in the ACT, the Northern Territory, Queensland, and Victoria. And overall financial stress, the aggregate measure, was up in the Northern Territory, Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, at 47.3% overall. Looking at the numbers on that, of the 4.725 households in financial stress, compared with the 10 million households overall, you can see it's just under half. There are 1.8 million households in mortgage stress, And there are 2.3 million households in rental stress. And stressed investors are just over 500,000. The rental stress story is the one that concerns me the most, actually, because it's putting more and more pressure on a sector of the economy that really can't afford it. Incomes are still not rising fast enough to chase rising rents. We can also look at it by our cohorts or segments. And you can see here that the overall percentage is highest in mortgage stress for young growing families, including first-time buyers, 91.5% there. The highest rental stress at 86% is multicultural establishment households. They're the first generation migrants to Australia. And this is the story that is not being told. A lot of migrants are coming into the country and are immediately going into the rental sector and struggling to find somewhere that they can afford. Investor stress is highest among more affluent households, the exclusive professionals, which are the most affluent of all, and the young affluent. And of course, they have the greatest share of investment properties too, so that's not that surprising. And overall financial stress of 68%, again, is lodged amongst young growing families, including first-time buyers. But just by the law of numbers, it's worth noting that the largest cohorts of households are disadvantaged fringe households and suburban mainstream households, of which 490,000 of disadvantaged fringe households are actually in mortgage stress, and 380,000 of suburban mainstream households are in rental stress. Stressed investors are lurking amongst exclusive professionals and suburban mainstream. And overall financial stress actually is sitting amongst disadvantaged fringe households overall, 915,990 households with a difficulty. What we can then do is to look briefly at the postcodes, and this is reporting the number in mortgage stress and the percentage of households in mortgage stress as well. And you can see here that in Liverpool, postcode 2170, more than 13,400 households have a problem. And that's 97% of those borrowing. In Campbelltown in New South Wales, 2560, slightly smaller number, but almost everybody with a mortgage has cash flow pressures. Wanneroo in Western Australia, 6065, is up there too at 77%. And in Toowoomba up in Queensland, 4350, more than 10,800 households have a problem. Then we go to Victoria, 3805 Narrewarren, 3810 Pakenham, 3806 Berwick, and 3350 Ballarat. Ballarat, of course, a regional area, but the others, the suburban areas of Victoria, the high growth corridors. There's also a lot of building going on in and around Ballarat, so a lot of those with mortgage stress are actually with relatively new mortgages, particularly on home and land packages. Then we go to Roxburgh Park in Victoria, 3064. Tarnet in Victoria, 3029. And then back to New South Wales, Riverstone, 2765. Camden in New South Wales, 2570. And Camp Hill in Queensland, 4152. We can also measure the risk of default. This is looking forward over the next year. And the total counts are relatively low. But in Cranbourne in Victoria, 3977, at 5.5%, or 1,259 households at risk, is right up there at the top. Then Mandurah, Western Australia, 6210. Now, Mandurah is still suffering from the massive run-up in debt that we saw before COVID, when prices ran up and then fell back again at 7%. Roxburgh Park in Victoria, 3064. Armidale in Western Australia, 6122, and Tarnet, 3029, are all up there as well in terms of risk of default. WA postcode 6164, a success. Gosford in New South Wales, 2250. Wanneroo in Western Australia, 6065. Derrimut, 3030. Toowoomba, 4350. And Bundaberg, 4670. And we'll just make the point that Western Australian postcodes are still dealing with the previous cycle of pressure despite recent run-ups in home prices, there are still problems lodged in the system from some years ago. Looking at the rental stress, the highest rental stress is in postcode 3000 Melbourne, Victoria, at 86% in rental stress, or more than 15,500. Then Toowoomba, 4350, Liverpool, 2170, Westmead, 2145, Southport, 4215, Coomera, 4209, Derrimut, 3030, Tarnet, 3029, Campbelltown, 2560, Zetland, 2017, Mount Druitt, 2770, Blacktown, 2148, and Parramatta, 2150. And looking at stressed investors, Cranbourne again is up there at 3977, Narrabum in New South Wales, 602065, Southport in Queensland, 4215, Craignish in Queensland, 4655, Bundaberg in Queensland, 4670. It's worth highlighting a number of Queensland postcodes where investors are going backwards. Consider it at the moment, yields are not covering costs. Carnegie in Victoria, 3163, Glen Iris in Victoria, 3146, McDowell in Queensland, 4053, Toowoomba, 4350, Mandurah, West Australia, 6210, and Westmead, 2145. And looking at financial stress overall, we can see there that Liverpool postcode 2170 is top of the list this time, with more than 29,000 households in financial stress. Then Toowoomba, 4350, 27,800. Then Campbelltown, 2560. Then Tarnet, 3029. Derrimut, 3030. Cranbourne, 3977. Melbourne, 3000. Westmead, 2145. Roxburgh Park, 3064. Ballarat, 3350, Mount Druitt, 2770, Southport, 4215, and Blacktown, 2148. Now, we also run scenarios. Scenarios are a way of exploring different futures. They're not predictions, they're sensitivities. And this time in our scenarios, we had our normal three, the Goldilocks zone, which we do see a rate cut in December to 3.35%. Inflation eases in line with RB expectations, but wages rise faster than inflation. No recession in Australia, and migration remains strong. First-time buyers also are booming. The base case is a softer landing with rates staying at 3.65 until 2026. They stay above target, actually, until 2026. We don't get a recession in Australia, but migration falls to around average. And the worst case is a nightmare scenario where we have hiring. And the nightmare scenario, rates stay high to 3.6% in 2026, but inflation steps up, unemployment rises, wages growth stalls due to second-order trade-led recession in Australia. So we see rate cuts later, but migration drops below average. And in that scenario, the scenario is that on the best-case scenario, there is still significant momentum in house prices, 15% over the next 3 years. On the base case, pretty much line ball over 3 years, but the worst case, a potential fall of around 20%. And in fact, units would follow on quite closely, although the downside may be a little lower for units compared with houses. Now, I have information down at the state level, but I'm not going to touch that today. We may come back to that in the live show, depending on what people would like to explore. But as I come towards the end of the conversation, there's a couple of other points it's really worth making, I think, at this stage. We have granular information down at the postcode level. This, for example, is postcode 2500. This is Wollongong, a place I know very well, of course. And here you can see that we've got information on the number of households in the postcode, the proportion borrowing and renting and investing. We've got information about the proportion of households in mortgage stress and rental stress and overall stress as well. That feeds into our scenario modelling as well. We also have a breakdown of the households by type of property, houses, units and other types of property. We've got a people ratio, which tells us something about whether it's households with families or singles or just couples. Vacancy rate data, gross and investment yield information. Gross investment yield, of course, is the comparison between the price of property and the theoretical rental of property. Net investment yield is actual return from a cash flow perspective from investors. Unfortunately, here you can see it underwater by 1.4%. Then we've got taxable income data from the ATO and from the census, which gives us access to disposable monthly income. In this postcode, just under $6,000. And you can see that the average mortgage repayment is taking about 41% of disposable monthly income at the moment, which is very high. And the renting is around one third of income going on the rentals, again, very high. As a result of that, we can feed it into the model and we can see here that there are still upside potentials for house prices in this particular postcode in the best case scenario, but the base or worst case scenarios would suggest a potential fall. Now, if you'd like information about a particular postcode, you can provide that to me live on the show on Tuesday and I can put the information online. Or if you'd like me to do some analysis before and I can include perhaps some price information too, can't do that real time, takes too much time to do, you can put it in the comments below. I'll use it as part of the show content because, of course, that really is where the rubber hits the road. We can get into significant detail about what households are up to. Are they able to manage their costs or not? So as we come towards the end of the show, a couple of closing remarks from me. The first is, I think this conversation about household finances and what's really going on is really important. Unfortunately, in my surveys, it's true that many households that we interact with really don't have a good feel about money in versus money out. In some cases, they do have some records. In other cases, they don't seem to have any records at all. About half don't keep a cash flow. So my first observation for anybody who's feeling the pressure, building a cash flow and understanding where the money is coming in and where it's going out is step one. Step two, of course, is if you do have pressure thanks to a mortgage or other types of debt, then it is worth thinking about talking to your lender. Although I have to say that many lenders are just extending and pretending, which means that they don't necessarily do the right thing by the household. They do the right thing by the bank, because if you actually extend the term of the mortgage, you maybe reduce your repayments, but you pay a lot more interest, of course. And if you go interest only, you pay a lot more interest, of course. So it is quite important to make sure that you're getting the right guidance. And that's where getting financial counseling advice can help. Now, again, it's important to stress that you shouldn't just Google it, because there are lots of nefarious people out there who will charge you an arm and a leg for providing advice that you could get free. But the one that we always recommend is the National Debt Helpline, 1-800-007-007. This is something that you can access via live chat or via the phone. And they are, of course, experts at helping people to figure out their debt problems and debt solutions, and also think about the complex solutions, including things like natural disasters, family violence, and economic abuse as well. They are really, really good. Very busy, of course, as I said earlier on. And interestingly, they published a recent statistic that showed that 74% of those people who interact with financial counsellors can avoid legal action. 69% are more positive about the future. 66% resolve their financial difficulties. 63% improve their mental well-being. 53% avoid bankruptcy. And 45% improve their physical health. The point is, this is more than just a financial. This is actually life-changing, potentially, for some people. So it is worth considering accessing financial counselling if you have severe financial pressures. Don't just put your head in the sand and hope it'll go away. Another tool that's quite helpful is the Statement of Financial Position that AFCA provides. The Statement of Financial Position breaks down the household structure into income and living expenses, property details, other assets, debts, and also some information around your proposal vis-a-vis your financial position. This can be really useful if you go talk to your lender or indeed to a financial counsellor, and it's available online at AFCA's website. Now, if you're interested in getting more information about a particular postcode or suburb, as I say, you can put it in the chat below and I'll try and answer it on Tuesday, or join me on the live stream where we can go through some of that granular analysis. Alternatively, you can actually subscribe via Patreon. We have a series of Patreon levels. Thank you for those who do support us via these levels. It's really appreciated. And the $50 a month plus GST is actually the level for accessing the granular information at a postcode level down to the 200,000 or so postcodes that we analyze each month. So if you want to get that spreadsheet, you're welcome via Patreon. We make it available each month for those who have subscribed via Patreon. So as I come to the end of the show, two final takeaways. The first is, I think that my initial hypothesis that there are households in significant financial pressure still stands. There is nothing in the most recent data that devalues or negates my hypothesis. In fact, the latest data from the surveys and other information from other sources like financial counselling underscore it too, which then puts us at odds with the mainstream narrative that everything's fine, households are spending again, wealth effect is working, etc., etc. So I believe that my approach to analysis is actually getting to a clearer view of what's going on than a lot of the stuff that's out there. Unfortunately, though, the story is not one that a lot of people want to relate to. But if you are those who are caught in this financial pressure, this financial dilemma, then, as I say, there are ways forward, beginning to think about household finances in cash flow terms. If you have debts with big interest rates, start paying them down first. And there's other steps too that are feasible for people in difficulty. But the first is to recognize you have an issue. And that's what perhaps this show is more about than anything else. If you do have financial pressures, get help. You're not alone. There are others in similar positions. And unfortunately, the numbers are still very high at the moment. Join us on Tuesday for more on this. And if you have a specific interest in a postcode, make sure that you let me know and I'll try and cover it. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching and I'll see you again next time.